This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This is Chris from Amateur Traveler. Today's episode is a repeat. It's from our back catalog, and it's about the island of Malta. And I picked this one because that's where I am this week, on the island of Malta. Have a listen. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no. Amateur Traveler, episode 718. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about walled cities, megalithic temples, fishing villages, the Knights of St. John, and the Catacombs of St. Paul as we go to the island nation of Malta. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Malta. I'd like to welcome to the show Michelle and Nikki from CheekyPassports.com, who've come to talk to us about the island nation of Malta. Michelle and Nikki, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good morning, Chris. thank you for having us on your podcast.
Well, and what is your connection with Malta?
Well, Chris, we are born and bred in Malta. We are native of this tiny island, yeah? We travel a lot, but somehow we keep returning back home. It has that little connection which keeps taking us back to home.
We like living here.
And if we had to put it on a map, if people don't know where we're talking about, we're just a little south of Italy and just a little north of Africa.
That's correct, Chris. We're bang in the middle of the Mediterranean. In fact, the best way to connect to the island is by plane, by air. There's an international airport which serves a lot of countries, and that is probably the best connection. Although there is a ferry to Sicily, which takes about 2 hours. It's not a long ferry, so that's the best way to connect.
Well, and why should someone go to Malta?
The island is small, and that has its restrictions, but it's also a nice thing to have because you can visit and do a lot of activities in a short span. Nowhere is more than 15 minutes by car. Well, it could be longer with traffic, but in reality, the island is, well, maybe 27 kilometers, about 17 miles long, and barely 14 kilometers wide. So you get an idea of how tiny the place is, and it's really easy to get around here.
But there is a lot of traffic, we should say that. So sometimes it takes hours to get from place to place. but there's a lot of history and culture in Malta. Mm-hmm. There are small villages you can visit. There are large fortified towns. Visitors usually like the historical aspect of Malta. There are some of the oldest freestanding temples in the world. It's nice. It's a pleasant island. It's nice to visit overall. There are the beaches. There's a lot to do in Malta, despite its size.
Well, Malta can be considered as a modern country. We have mm-hmm. all the facilities one would imagine. But still, some places have retained the traditional character. So it's a nice mix of modern and antique and traditional. So you get a little bit of everything for whatever you want to do.
Excellent. Well, where are we going to start if we go to visit Malta?
Probably the best place to start is the capital city, Valletta. Mm-hmm. In terms of a city, it's very small. It's not like other capital cities. It's more like a small town. It's a fortified city. It has a lot of history, a lot of culture. The population in Valletta is actually small, unlike other capital cities. It's more of an administrative sort of capital, but with lots of shops and with lots of museums, with lots of churches, of which there are many in Malta in general. And it's a very quaint capital city. So people usually like to come here, just get lost in the streets, explore.
Well, Valletta has maintained its charm. It was built by the Knights of Malta. And there's almost three centuries of history tied to that. Old palaces are still standing there, despite some damage in the wartime period. There are quite a lot of entertainment venues, if you like, restaurants and bars, traditional or other type of cuisine. You get a selection of almost anything. And, of course, a lot of cultural activities, be it concerts, theater, and other activities, which center around the capital city. And that's why it's a nice place to start off.
It gives a good introduction to the whole of the island, probably.
Great. And let's get into a lot more detail on that. So, first of all, you said it was small, and I thought, well, how small is small? So I had to look it up. So you're talking less than 6,000 people.
Yeah. Yes, that sounds pretty much
okay,
correct.
That's small. Okay. I was thinking larger than that when you said small. So really small. It's more of a town for many of us. And I don't know what they would even call that in places like China, where a city is a million people. And then you talked about different museums, churches, palaces. Let's go through those one at a time in terms of what you would recommend that we see. So specifically...
Well, starting off with the churches, let's start with the most important
one. Okay, we'll start with the churches.
There's the cathedral, of course, mm-hmm. St. John's Cathedral, which when you Google it up, you'll just see a plain facade. But once you get inside this cathedral, it's so richly decorated that it's really mesmerizing. Marble, and at times there was gold before legends has it that Napoleon just decided to take it all away. And some nice stories there tied to the history of the place. Attached to the cathedral, there's also the Cathedral Museum, which is home to many artifacts, but amongst others, a painting of Caravaggio, which spent a couple of years interned here in Malta on his way to Italy, and who gladly left some of his paintings with us to enjoy.
Well, you mentioned that that was the church, and I should have guessed, actually, that it was the Cathedral of St. John. Because yeah. The whole city, the whole idea for the city was by the Knights of the Order of St. John. The Hospitaller Knights, the knights who were taking care of the sick and wounded on the Crusades in Jerusalem, for instance. So it makes sense that that's who the church would be named after. We've got a whole group of knights there who founded the city.
Yeah. In fact, you'll realize that most things in Malta are named after saints.
Okay. Well, I got that from we'll start with the important thing, the churches.
Yeah. Well, there are, if I'm not wrong, 365 churches in Malta. So if you stay here for a year, you could visit one a day without going back to the other. Well, in Valletta, one of the museums which is very popular is the Archaeology Museum. Okay. And the reason being is that the history in Malta spans for 5 millennia, even more, mm-hmm. as Michel introduced before. Not in Valletta, but outside of Valletta, there are the oldest megalithic temples in the world. Right. They're even older than Stonehenge and the pyramids themselves. I'm mentioning Hajar Aym in Nidra and Gigantia in Gozo. They are three different clusters of megalithic temples. And most of the artifacts which have been recovered from these excavations and other places, of course, have been stored and are on display in this archaeological museum, which is in Valletta. That said, all these sites are still very much worth a visit, although they're not strictly in Valletta, but 20 minutes by bus out of the capital city and you'll be there. And amongst these, there is also what is called the Hal Safina Hypogeum. It's one of my favorite spots. It's a megalithic necropolis underground. It was discovered almost by chance about 150 years ago. At the moment, it's very well preserved, but we would recommend to your listeners that if they would like to visit, they should book ahead. It can be done online because the place takes about 10 visitors an hour. It's a guided tour. But it's a necessary precaution because the environmental system within this underground structure is so delicate that it can't take mass tourism inside it. So it's still worth a visit. I believe the tickets cost somewhere like 17 or 18 euros, which is really worth the cost, although it's slightly higher than what you'd expect. But you get a guided tour included in that.
Just to make it clear, this hypogeum is not in Valletta. It's outside of Valletta, but the artifacts which were found are in this museum in Valletta.
Okay.
Another nice spot in Valletta would be the Upper Baracca. It's a lovely viewpoint sited above the Grand Harbor area. So if you have in mind how Malta looks, there's this harbor area, which is it's a commercial hub. It's a very popular spot for cruises and cruise liners. Mm-hmm. And from this Upper Baracca, there is a lovely view of the Grand Harbor area and what we call the three cities, which are three ancient cities, fortified also. There are fortifications built themselves by the knights. Different grandmasters had a say in building the different places, which have now been also regenerated. And each individually, they're home to themselves, museums, churches of relevance, and of course, dining areas. We Maltese love to eat, as good old Boris Johnson has recently mentioned in the news.
So from the Upper Baracca Gardens, there is a lovely view of the Grand Harbor and these fortified cities. So it's really worth going there and taking a nice picture.
Okay.
Then out of Valletta, what we would really recommend, another fortified city, but it's an older, it was Malta's ancient capital, it's Imdina. The resemblance with Medina, mm-hmm. it has a connection with the Arab world. It was the ancient capital of Malta. And it is really a beautiful spot to visit. I would recommend doing it by night. It's also known as the Silent City. It's a very quiet place, unlike probably the rest of the island. And it's a very quiet place to visit. And there are excellent views from on top the bastions. And particularly famous for the chocolate cake of one of the places to visit. Just next to the bastions.
And it's a quiet place because it doesn't get much tourism or...
Well, the way it was designed to control invaders is it's a series of very narrow roads.
Okay.
It's not built like Valletta. Valletta was another concept. Valletta's built in a grid shape. Yep. And the idea for Valletta was to increase the mobility and facilitate the mobility of the army.
Sure.
But Imdina was built on a different concept. A lot of alleys and intertwining roads. Very narrow, so you can't get an idea of your location, and orientation is very difficult unless you really, really know the place. And the idea was if invaders managed to get in, the locals could just run away and into their hideouts and while the invading army would simply get lost in the alleyways. So nowadays, traffic is not allowed inside.
And there are only 250 residents in the citadel. So
okay.
That is why it is so quiet as well. You can walk around it in 15 to 20 minutes, walking slowly. So it's a really small place. But it's really easy to get lost in because of the narrow lanes and the narrow roads. It was built specifically that way.
Well, and then, I mean, the other reason it seems like it wouldn't have grids is this is a much, much older city. It's, 2,300 years older than Valletta? So this being founded by Phoenicians and the other one founded in the 1500s. So this is a 8th century B.C., this goes yes. back to, although the buildings I'm looking at are not from the 8th century BC. But
yes, but that is really correct. Again, there's a lot of history there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the original buildings, unfortunately, had been replaced, but,
sure, yeah.
but not with modern buildings.
And you and I would have done that if we had lived there too. So,
well, most of the huts have been replaced by a number of palaces and lovely right. homes there.
And there's also a very beautiful cathedral in Imdina, St. Paul's Cathedral.
Yes, correct.
It's probably the gem of Imdina.
Well, and this city is on a tentative list as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so it's definitely something people are recognizing as being remarkable.
Yeah,
that's correct. And next to Imdina, there's my favorite town, which is Rabat. And it's my hometown, just to say.
That's all right. We all have favorites.
Bred and born. Born and bred. Well, it used to be the suburb of Imdina. And that's where the locals used to bury their dead. And they used to do so in underground tunnels.
Got it.
And all over the place, almost in every home, you get the series of interconnecting tunnels. The catacombs. Some of them have been beautifully restored, especially the St. Paul's catacombs, very close to St. Paul's Church, one of the major churches, which is very much worth a visit there. It's also very important for the locals because it's dedicated to St. Paul, who was the apostle responsible, so to say, for introducing the Christian religion into Malta. As you may be aware, Christianity is very, very much important on the island.
Mm-hmm.
By the number of churches, you could have probably deduced that by Jose.
Well, and Paul got there, I want to say by accident, but that's probably not very good theologically, but he was shipwrecked there for 3 months on his way to Rome.
That's correct.
No, it is correct. And in fact, he wasn't accepted by the locals.
Well, the story in Acts was, and I'm doing this from memory, was that he was picking up a load of firewood and there was an asp in it and he was bitten by it. And they thought, this person must be cursed by God because he's in the shipwreck. And now as he's rescued from that, he's bitten by a snake, but he shakes off the snake and nothing happens. And so they decide instead that he is blessed by God. And so they listen to what he has to say.
That shows someone who has done his research.
Well, no, that's someone who also has a Bible study podcast.
Oh, okay.
Then let me tell you another story about that.
Okay.
Legend has it that besides doing that, St. Paul took the poison out of the snake. That's why in Malta there are no poisonous snakes anymore.
Okay.
But then he put it in the tongues of the wives.
Not so funny.
That's a bit of a sexist joke, unfortunately, which our female friends do not appreciate at all. So, back to Rabat. I am very much interested in food, as you can deduce yourself. There is one of the most famous pastizzi place.
Okay.
Now, pastizzi is
like a small flaky pastry pie, which can be stuffed with either ricotta cheese or mashed peas. There are two main flavors. Nowadays, there are lots of other flavors, but the traditional flavors are ricotta or mashed peas. Traditionally, there are a lot of small pastizzi shops around the island, but there's a very famous one in Rabat. And people flock there from all over the island. Especially if you're in Imdina, you have to make a stop at this pastizzi place.
It is just outside the Imdina wall, so you can't really miss it.
Okay. Does it have a name?
Yes, Serkin.
It's called Serkin.
Well, not... the proper name is Crystal's Palace, Crystal Palace. But the locals refer to it as Serkin.
Okay.
Pastizzi are very cheap, very filling, very fatty too, but we love them.
They're not really healthy if you're on a diet, but I mean, yeah, who cares? You're on holiday.
Excellent. Let's back up just a little bit. Anything else we should see in Mdina while we're there?
Well, Mdina, as I said, it's nice to visit by day. There's the cathedral, which would be open.
And you said to visit by night, and you didn't say why.
Oh, yeah. Well, by night, it's related to the atmosphere of the place.
Okay.
It's nicely lit.
There's very low lighting.
Low lighting.
It's quiet.
It's safe. Well, I would say most of the country is very safe, to be honest.
But, it's a very romantic place to have a short walk in. It's really beautiful to walk around at night. But obviously, most places would be shut.
And the view from the bastions at night, you get to see, well, what is 3/4 of the island, not the city, the island itself. And the view is, well, just lovely. And if you happen to visit around summer or pre-summer, in the summer shoulder months, there would be a nice light breeze being a bit elevated, which makes the whole experience really enjoyable. And then just get some takeaway pastizzi for your walk, and you'll be sorted for the day.
Well, and so a couple of questions for you. One is, you mentioned if you happen to visit in summer, when would you recommend people come?
Well, the most popular time is summer, of course, but mm-hmm. we would rather recommend to take up the shoulder months.
Okay.
I would say anything which is May, June
is a lovely time.
Beginning of July. I would avoid August.
Okay.
It's the most popular period. It's the safest when it comes to weather, but it's also the hottest. It's the period where we're terribly overpopulated.
Yep.
All the beaches are full. There are shut down holidays for all the workers. So every Maltese is on the beach. You can't really move, you can't really breathe. And the prices would be sky high. So my favorite period would be May, June, and September, October is also a nice period to visit. But in September, October, you risk some rain occasionally, but not necessarily. We had beautiful weather last year, extended till November, even beginning of December. And we could also swim. The weather is just brilliant in that period.
Yeah, Malta, you can swim till mid-November easy.
Okay, interesting. Well, and the other question for you is, we're talking about, as we said, a small island. Would you recommend for a one-week itinerary, we plant ourselves in one place and do day trips, or would you recommend a couple different places to spend the night?
We would suggest you stay at one place and then take day trips all along.
Everywhere is really close, so it's really easy to travel around. There's no point in spending your time between two places because you can get anywhere quite easily.
Public transport has improved, although it's not our favorite means of transportation. And we Maltese, we love our cars, so there's a lot of traffic usually. That said, you could very easily rent a car or a motorcycle, but be aware that you would need a full license, international driving license for both.
And we drive on the left.
And we do drive on the left.
Ah, okay.
So that could be confusing for some people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we also have some services like Uber, which is not quite Uber, but some services which are similar. They could be a tad more expensive, but it's really easy.
Now, I would look that up. By on my phone by saying not quite Uber, or does it have another name?
Oh, sorry. I would suggest Bolt, B-O-L-T. That's the major one.
Terrific.
But the services are mushrooming somehow, so there could be much more by the time.
Sure, sure.
We're also known to be very bad drivers, so one has to be a bit cautious. It's a really good way of getting around if you decide to drive on the island because mm-hmm. it's so small. But we're known to not be very good drivers. So.
That's always the advantage of having the locals on who can say that and not get in trouble as much.
Yeah. In fact, whenever we travel, people tell us, oh, you should be careful driving and so and so. And we're like, it's fine. We learn to drive in Malta. Anything else is easy.
Well, and then in Rabat, with the catacombs, Would I do a tour if I wanted to see the catacombs?
You could really do it independently, but or have a guidebook. But yes, tours are widely available. You could get it organized by a hotel, or as I said, you could do it independently. It all depends on what kind of traveler you are.
Okay.
Do keep in mind that tourism is a big thing in Malta, so you get all the options available to you without needing to hassle much. So if you want a comfortable day tour and day trip, you'll get a taxi organized for you from the door of your hotel to the catacombs with a guided tour and back. Or you just could do it yourself, simply, and explore the island by yourself. I would suggest doing the latter, but it all depends on what kind of traveler you are. English and Maltese are our official languages, and most Maltese speak English very well. Many speak Italian and also French. So
Spanish too, probably.
You're probably sorted when it comes to language barriers. I wouldn't say it would be a major issue.
Well, in my understanding of Maltese as a language is that it's like 50% Italian, Sicilian, and then 30% Arabic in terms of where it's coming from because of where it is.
Some French and some English thrown in as well.
You have to keep in mind that before our independence, which was a few decades ago, Malta was conquered by almost all the powers in the world. Each and every one of them just left a little bit of their influence there. So now we have this lovely secret language which we can use when we're abroad and discuss things without the locals of the other places knowing what we'd be saying. So it comes in very handy when you're an international traveler.
Well, and you say all the countries of the world. I can at least count the Phoenicians, Romans, Moors, the Knights of St. John, the French, and the British. So I may be missing some there, but you've had some influences from different regions.
Especially, as you say, the Knights and the British after the Knights.
Probably anyone had interest in the Mediterranean conquered us. Malta's location is very strategic.
Right, sure.
In terms of it being right in the middle of the Mediterranean between Europe and Africa.
Well, and not just in the middle of the Mediterranean, but at the kind of the narrow spot in between Tunis and Sicily there. So, very, very strategic both today and in the past.
Yes, that's right. Excellent. Everyone wanted a little piece of Malta and Gozo, our sister island.
I also wanted to comment because about when you asked how you would get to see the catacombs. Almost everyone who lives in Rabat has catacombs in their gardens or under their houses.
So you can
just ask a local
to show
you the catacombs in their houses.
That's funny. Well, and where should we go next? Or is it all downhill after you've been to Rabat?
Well, not downhill, no. This time I would take you uphill, but not at night. Rabat is on the, what we say, central west coast, which is the greener area, the less developed in terms of buildings.
Okay.
The eastern side of Malta has seen a lot of development, I would say unfortunately, but the west is pretty much pristine. And if you love nature and love the occasional walks and you'd like to enjoy a bit of the natural habitat of Malta, then take off from Rabat and visit the west coast, either to the south or to the north. It's all pretty much undeveloped. There are lovely walks, especially next door to Rabat, there's Dingli and what is known as Dingli Cliffs, a sheer drop, something like 80 meters of cliffs adjacent to the sea, and it makes for a lovely, lovely walk there. So it's a nice
lovely
place.
Sunset spot as well.
And a lovely sunset spot.
There are many trails along the west coast where you can take hikes or treks. In fact, in winter, we like to do a lot of trekking over there. You have the sea on one side, nature on the other, and it's always beautiful.
In fact, as Michelle said, the area is very popular for winter tourists. It might be a bit too hot in summer, but it's just great in winter. We don't get very cold winters. It's really rare that the temperature falls below 5 degrees
Celsius.
5 degrees Celsius. I'm sorry, I don't know how that translates
to Fahrenheit. About 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
But it makes for a pleasant walk in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Then, whilst we're mentioning pristine places, there's of course the sister island of Gozo, one of my other favorite spots in the island, in my country. I have relatives there, so I'm also tied a bit to the island. But the island has seen less development than Malta, and it's not connected to the mainland by road or by tunnel, but it's connected with a very short 30-minute ferry ride, which is also very cheap to get there.
Okay.
But that little distance has ensured that Gozo has kept most of its original character, its traditional character.
It has a lot more authenticity than Malta. There are still some villages in Malta which are quaint, but most of Gozo is quaint. So it's a really pretty island to visit. And a day trip would be enough probably because it's really small.
Yes. All across Gozo, there are also some nice spots to visit. There's the Cittadella, which is the equivalent of Mdina, if you want to say.
But in Gozo, yeah.
But in Gozo, it's also a fortified city. Some beautiful views from there, too.
When we say city, it's tiny.
Yes, please do keep the scale in mind.
Well, and now I know your definition of tiny, so that
it's
helps.
It's a 10-minute walk around.
Okay.
And, well, of course, there are also a number of nice fishing villages, Shlendi, Marsalforn, Imjar, where you can get some lovely lunches and dinners around the place, too.
And Imjar is where the ferries land, so that's a place that'd be easy for us to find, right?
Exactly, yes, okay. yes. One of the most famous spots, which unfortunately got lost recently, was the Dweira window. It was a backdrop for one of the Game of Thrones episodes, and that made it even more famous. But unfortunately, due to natural events, due to actually erosion, this window just collapsed. Although the area is still very ecologically pristine and a favorite spot with nature lovers and a great spot for sunsets. We totally recommend staying there for a sunset in that area, one of the best sunset spots. Incidentally, it's also one of the nicest diving spots. I believe we haven't mentioned diving.
No.
Of course, diving is a very popular activity here in Malta. You get foreigners who just spend their time underwater, not over water. They would spend months, 2-3 months, just diving. It's very popular with British diving tourism, for example. It's fun, let's say. There are a number of wrecks which have been scuttled on purpose to make the place more interesting. But there are also some natural underwater formation and Posidonian flora and fauna cultures, which are incredibly interesting if you're into the diving. I am myself. That's why I speak about it with some passion.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of favorite places, you say the Azure Window is a good spot. Do you have another favorite spot?
Yes, I would say the fishing villages of Shlendi and Marsalforn. Both are very, very popular spots with locals where it comes to social and nightlife there. By nightlife, I think it's past the disco times. But the lovely promenades of both towns provide for an excellent backdrop, especially in the summer months. Where most people just like wandering about, stopping and chatting with the locals and people they meet there. So that is also a nice place to consider to visit.
Now, Shlendi, I see, is on Gozo. Is the other as well?
So is Marsalforn, yes. Okay. It's on the eastern side. And one other popular beach, very popular, is Ramlal Hamra.
It literally translates to red beach because the sand is golden red.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Not a small beach. Well, in Malta terms, it's not a small beach. It's popular, but it's not overcrowded like some of the beaches in Malta. The beaches in Gozo tend to be far less crowded, so it's a really nice spot to swim.
One other nice spot, if you're not done with archaeology, would be the Gigantilla temples.
Oh, sure.
Another set of megalithic temples.
In Gozo.
I believe it's a bigger complex than Hajar Im, if I'm not wrong. I'm not too sure about that. But the name Gigantilla, as the name implies, it's giants.
Right.
That's where
right.
the giants lived. And the reason is because it's built with stones which are so huge that they would be very difficult to put in place even with modern technology. So it's a bit of a mystery how the stones have been quarried and placed in such a way in that place. So as you can see, there's a little bit of everything, a little bit of everywhere.
Well, and what I'm seeing that is, one, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and two, I'm seeing that it's the second oldest religious structure in the world, but we'll talk about the Turks there some other time, that they have someone that's claimed to be older, but we're going way back to 3600 BC.
Yeah, in fact, we thought it was, we're always told that it was the largest, the oldest freestanding structure in the world, but I went to look that up and it seems it's not anymore.
We do have to verify that claim. We're very patriotic.
That's okay. I always look those up because I find the tourism board sometimes exaggerates just a little bit.
That's right. Then in the summer months, every town and every village in Malta has his own festa, the village feast. There are, of course, some modern additions, but it's mostly a traditional feast where the patron saint of that parish, of that city,
sure,
is celebrated. So you get a band club or a number of band clubs, decorations along the road, an atmosphere of festivity in that particular week. But depending on when you come over to Malta, there's the tourism authority has a website which gives a calendar of events. Okay. One could plan his stay to maybe visit this feast, especially close to the weekends, Fridays or Sundays, where there's a lovely show of fireworks. We love our fireworks displays. Yeah, so they can be noisy for some, but I believe they're also beautiful and entertaining. So that's something which, if you're visiting Malta in the summer period, you should probably put on your itinerary.
The fest season is usually between May and September, I believe.
So it's very easy to get into that. Well, the country goes crazy probably in Santa Maria, which is 15th August. There are 7 or 8 parishes which celebrate it at one go.
Okay.
So if you go to somewhere where, like Mdina in that period, you can see 7 or 8 different firework displays across the whole island. It's mesmerizing. It's beautiful.
Well, and I understand there is also a Malta International Fireworks Festival at the end of April?
Yeah, yes, that's also correct. It's usually based around the Grand Harbor area. And one of the best places to visit, though it could be crowded, is the Upper Baraka, what I mentioned, one of the Valletta sites to visit. But yes, you are correct. Although it could be busy there and you'd rather view the display from the other side, which is the three cities, one of the three cities.
Got it. In terms of places to stay, is there a particular, you said home base in one place, is there a particular place that you would recommend?
If you're driving, we suggest staying outside the more popular area. So you'll find B&Bs and apartments to rent anywhere around the island. And if you have a car, you can just stay anywhere in the more quiet areas and just drive around to the more popular places when you need to. If you're not driving, it would be best to stay in the more popular areas. So that would be Slema and St. Julian's, because there is all forms of entertainment, restaurants, tourist facilities. They're very, very touristic areas. So it's really easy if you stay there. They can be noisy, though, especially in the summer months. They get very noisy.
Okay. Now, in terms of, you've mentioned a couple times with when we were in Valletta and now again, evening entertainment. Is there any place that you would recommend?
There's lots of restaurants and clubs in the St. Julian's and Slema areas, which I've just mentioned.
Yep.
There's all kinds of dining options.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, we have lots of favorites.
Melia, probably. Well, in the north of Malta, there's this town of Melliha. It would be a nice spot if you have a car to visit. It's midway between busy and quiet. It's not very quiet. It's not very busy either. But it is also home to some of our favorite restaurants. To mention one, I would say Buca Garni.
Yeah, we love that. It's a fish restaurant. It's lovely.
Commandos, which is a fish restaurant. But, oh, sorry, it's a general restaurant. But I'm thinking about fish. in the south of Malta, just on the other side of the country. Let me remind you, that's about 26 kilometers away, not too far then. There's a fishing village of Marsa Shlok.
And every restaurant there serves. There are a lot of fish restaurants, and they all serve really fresh fish. So if you like fish, that's the village to go to.
It's a very long promenade, and all the restaurants on the promenade serve fresh fish caught by family members who are fishermen, who just berth their boat outside of the restaurant, get the fish in, and that would make for a lovely, lovely fresh dinner there. Lunch or dinner, actually. Lunch or dinner in that area.
We're quite big on fish here in Malta.
Well, it also looks like quite the colorful and picturesque waterfront there with the multicolored boats and such.
It is.
Yeah, it's worth a visit, a short visit, because there's nothing much to do except walk along the promenade, see traditional fishing boats, and have lunch or have fish for lunch or dinner.
And take some Instagram photos.
I was gonna say, that's what I'm going to be doing. So.
All right.
Excellent. Are there any other places that you want to hit in terms of an itinerary before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
So if you have time, probably, and you're here in summer, a day trip to Comino, the island of Comino, is worthwhile. There are a couple of beaches. It's a tiny island, I think 3 square meters, is it?
Yes, it's the third largest of the archipelago, but it is uninhabited. There's only one.
No, there's three people there. But there's one or three people. There is the Blue Lagoon over there, which is a lovely, lovely, lovely stretch of blue water, and it's very, very popular in summer. So ideally, you shouldn't go there in August. It gets really packed, and it's a very small area. But if you go there in June, it's still quite empty. Or if you go midweek, maybe. It gets really packed in the weekends.
Well, one activity which is very popular recently, Chris, is chartering of sailing boats for the cost of, I would say, depending on the size of the boat, but I would say 400 or 500 euros. You could charter a boat for the whole day, including food. And you'll basically sail to anywhere you want, but the most popular destination, as Michelle mentioned, is the Blue Lagoon.
Got it.
All around Comino with its lovely cave formations and lovely spots for snorkeling or diving. Just basically a very nice place to have a nice chill time there. A nice bottle of wine would do also.
Also, you can get there with the ferry from Malta. It's
Got
not
it.
Just the charter boats. And if you charter a boat, it would be about 10 people, I suppose. So it would work out to around 40 or 50 euro each year.
Yes, yes.
And is that chartering a bare boat or with a captain?
You can have both, depending on your preferences. But I would say just relax and get the skipper and you'll just enjoy the whole trip and get drunk.
Being on the water on boats is very popular in Malta. Because there are so many people on land, people are heading out to the water. So many people just spend their days in summer on the water in boats.
Got it. As we go to wrap this up, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Malta. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
So we have two spots. One would be Comino's Blue Lagoon.
Okay.
Without the people, though.
Without the people, okay.
So you have to go on a quiet day or in shoulder season.
Mm-hmm.
The water is just lovely. There is a beautiful view. It's really relaxing. It's one of the most beautiful spots on the island.
Yes. And the other spot for me would probably be Mdina by night on the Bastions.
Okay.
Highly recommended.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Malta.
There are too many of them. There's
actually a Facebook page with that title.
Is there really?
Well, we tend to be very hot-headed, but at the same time, good people. So there are a lot of instances where people just get fired up and angry over something really stupid, and then they calm down after a while.
In general, I believe, Chris, we are a loud population,
okay.
Especially when we discuss in Maltese. You think it's the Third World War going on, when in actual fact, we would be discussing where to go and have dinner. you get these occasional stares from foreigners thinking that, oh my God, something is going on here, when in actual fact it would be really, really silly going on. So if you're in Malta and you're hearing someone shouting at you, he's probably giving you directions. Don't get scared.
Lots of gesticulation.
Oh, yes. We get that from our Sicilian cousins, and we like to gesticulate a lot with our hands. But in general, we mean no harm.
That's so funny, because you almost always, when we do amateur traveler, when I say what makes a place stand out, people will say, well, the people were so friendly. And Malta is the only place, I think, that people, somebody said, well, the people are so grumpy.
We do like to complain, to be honest, but you can have a good time, really.
And the people in general are actually very friendly. Maybe we don't come across as such sometimes, but we are.
Well, that's what I wondered when you were saying that. Exactly. Excellent. And if you had to summarize Malta in just three words, what three words would you use?
Tiny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Busy.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty. Sunny.
Yeah.
Sunny and pretty. Sunny and pretty.
Excellent.
That's four words.
Well, and our guests again have been Michelle and Nikki from CheekyPassports.com. And I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If we wanted to send people to your best post on CheekyPassports.com on Malta, where are we going to send them?
Let me be cheeky then. Just send them to the main page where the most recent post is, because that is the best one.
And the real answer to the question is, you, between now that we're recording this and when this comes out, you're hoping to write your first post on Malta.
We'll do our best, promise.
Excellent.
We get very caught up writing about our travels outside of Malta. That's, we never have time to write about Malta.
I completely understand. I was doing blogging for 15 years before I started a blog about my home state of California. So I relate to that. Excellent. Well, Michelle and Nikki, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for the beautiful island of Malta.
Thank you for having us, Chris. We really appreciate it.
In news of the community, a special thanks go out to all of the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler, especially Henry Suski, who is the newest patron of the show. Thank you, Henry. On last week's episode of the show about Iowa, I heard from Bob, who said, I would recommend a visit to the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum located in West Branch, Iowa. It is an easy stop adjacent to Interstate 80. I know that there are many of your listeners who enjoy visiting these libraries, and while this isn't as large as others, it is still a worthwhile visit to add to your personal collection of presidential libraries that you have visited. And Bob, I happen to be one of those people who likes visiting the presidential libraries. I don't think I have the presidential library passport yet, but I believe my wife does. And she's at least one presidential library ahead of me, because she's been to Reagan's and I have not. Catching up on some of the reviews that I mentioned I'm behind on, I got a review on the Podchaser site from ExpatCast, who said, Amateur Traveler has been putting out podcasts for literally more than half my life. The archive goes back to the mid-2000s, and new episodes continue to come out to this day. This means they've got shows on just about everywhere, just about anywhere and everywhere you might travel to. I typically just search for the name of a city or country that I'm heading to, and bam, there's at least one full episode, sometimes more. I also enjoy the host interviews, mostly locals, either people who grew up there or transplants who have lived in the area for a while, so tips aren't just touristy things. They cover that too, and typically are frank about the tourist stuff you should skip and the stuff that's worth it. But they go beyond that to discuss locals' favorite parks, restaurants, day trips, etc. I don't like to overplan trips, but I also don't want to miss anything accidentally. So on my last trip, I limited my research to just listening to the relevant episode of Amateur Traveler. It was a perfect, easy way to get an overview and some insider info, which is how I discovered the amazing Chocolate Cafe in Luxembourg, where I fell in love with chocolate spoons. Hashtag forever grateful. I'm listening to the relevant episodes for my upcoming trip now, and it's getting me pumped. If you've got travel planned, I definitely recommend checking out if there's an episode on your destination. And obviously, I said I was behind on reviews. This review came out before we all got locked down. But hopefully that will come off again someday soon. In terms of supporting the show, we've talked about Patreon. Also, there is the affiliate links at amateurtraveler.com/affiliates. One of the sites that I want to mention is Intrepid, and Intrepid has done the back end for a number of the Amateur Traveler trips that we have done, all except for Egypt and Central Europe, but they are again going to do the back end for us of the trip to Turkey next year and to Central Asia coming up after that. And if you book through amateurtraveler.com/intrepid or go to amateurtraveler.com/affiliates, then when you book through that link, Amateur Traveler will make some money. And me. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.